This episode is part of our ongoing series with NI Connections, where each month we've the chance to sit down with someone interesting from Northern Ireland who's living and working overseas. To find out more about our global diaspora, listen to previous episodes in the series and sign up for a free monthly newsletter. Please visit niconnections.com. Thanks so much, and really hope you enjoy today's conversation. The place where I often start, Gemma, this will seem like such a random thing to do, but it usually kind of leads us to an interesting place. I love asking people, you know, what's like some of the first things you can remember? Or if I ask you to like cast your mind back as far as you can go, like what's some of the first things that pop into your head from your childhood?
I have really fond memories. Before I actually went to nursery school, I used to go to a place called We Care on the Antrim Road, and you kind of went there when you were about 2 or 3 years old.
Nice.
And I have really vivid memories. And one of my friends from We Care when we were like 2 or 3 is actually one of my best mates now, in our 30s, my friend Jane. And we both remember our teacher called Brenda. We both remember going for like naps in the middle of the day in these wee sleeping bags upstairs, and like eating our ice cream downstairs and just running around having a crack in We Care. So it's funny, like I have really fond memories of that place, but we were so young when we were there.
That's mad. I mean, but talk about lifelong friends then, like a friendship of 30 years. There's not too many people on the planet can boast that. Like,
yeah, I know. We joke about it a lot because she used to say we used to fight over the teacher because we're both like teacher's pets, and we used to fight over Brenda.
That's so awesome.
Talk to me about
like art. When did art come into your life? Was it always there from a young age, or is that something that kind of came in later on?
No, it was actually always there from a young age. So I have very early memories of just sitting at home and drawing and like teaching myself how to paint or draw certain things that I was interested in. And it kind of comes from my dad, because my dad was very creative as well. He studied art and was a graphic designer for many years. And then he went on to run the art department in St. Malachy's on the Antrim Road. So he would have had a huge influence on me as a child and taught me a lot technically as well. So I always had it within me. And then I always was supported, you know, to explore my creative side at home, and just continued it throughout school, and then obviously ended up going to art college and pursuing a career in art as well.
Epic. Talk to me about the Antrim Road. Like, if your dad was a teacher on the Antrim Road and you know, you were going to We Care there, I imagine you lived relatively close by. Like, talk to me about Antrim Road like 30 years ago and some of the things you'd get up to and some of the crack.
It was really good crack. We lived around the Antrim Road, Cave Hill area pretty much my whole life, and that's where all my friends were from at home, and went to school there. Dad, you know, worked there as well. So Antrim Road is home, and the crack, well, I have some mad memories. When we went to primary school, it was very different in the 90s. So I remember, you know, going to primary school on the Antrim Road as well, and there would be like bomb scares, and you know, the road would be blocked off, and how it's crazy, because my automatic thought as a kid was, yes, we don't need to go to school today, there's a bomb scare. And that was like so normal to us. Like, it was just a different time in the 90s, but that was so normal that we were all excited because we didn't have to go to school. And whenever I tell my friends, obviously I've lived abroad since I was 18, and when I tell other people that, like English people or American or Middle Eastern, they're just like, that's insane.
Yeah. They're like, what type of trauma response are you having right now? And you're like, oh, no, sure, it was gas. It was unbelievable. And you're like, what?
Yeah. We're like, no, it's normal. Not a bother.
That's mad. Did you always aspire, or did you always have it in your head to leave? Because, you know, some people, like I would say even for me, like, you know, I was growing up, say, you know, around 11, 12, 13, especially once I started getting into the 15 and 16 sort of bracket, I was getting real itchy. You know, I was like, I can't wait to leave this place and go. And that's obviously a big part of my story. But what about you? Was it like a last minute UCAS decision, or was it something that you kind of predetermined?
Yeah, I think I was quite similar to you. I started having big dreams when I was a teenager. I always believed I was going to do something creative. And for whatever reason, I always thought that that would end up being abroad. I used to, you know, whenever you're watching films and TV and everything as a kid, you associate America as like the place to go if you want to make it, or if you want to act or do art or something like that. So I think a slight part of me thought I would end up in America, but I didn't have any set plan, but I never questioned it. I always just thought that I would end up going abroad. And when I was in school, you know, when you're 17, 18, you start to get influenced by your mates a wee bit. And I actually did drama and art in my A-levels. And part of me kind of wanted to go and act, but a part of me knew I was much better. I was an average actress and a good painter. So, you know, intuitively, and I suppose my parents as well were like, you should probably go to art college. So yeah, part of me was going to stay in Northern Ireland and go to university because a lot of friends were doing that, and some were going to McGee in Derry to do acting, but I ended up just deciding I was going to go to London because that was the best place for me to pursue a career as an artist in my mind.
Yeah, I mean, there's something to be said. I think, you know, one of your favorite authors, James Clear, writes about it a lot. The idea of like leaning in, like life's hard enough, you may as well lean into your strengths as opposed to like trying to double down on like a blunt sword you have. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I would not be having a good time if I was an actress right now, I imagine.
So like parallel universe stuff here, okay? Like let's say you went on and you became an actor and you did very well out of it. What sort of stuff would you be wanting to do?
I always like TV and film rather than stage acting. I suppose from what I had done when I was younger, it was drama, like more serious stuff where you can portray like raw emotion.
Yeah,
would have been what I was interested in. I think that I would lean more into that than like comedy.
Sure.
Or lighthearted stuff, yeah.
But so anything you watched recently that you could be like, yeah, do you know what? That's the gay guy. If everyone was looking for me and my agent was saying no to everything, that's the thing I'd say yes to.
Do you know what I watched recently that I'm obsessed with? I don't really have time to watch a lot of TV and film.
Sure.
But everyone had been saying about Top Boy. So I binge watched Top Boy on Netflix. So I don't know. There is an Irish woman in Top Boy, but if they had a role for another one, I think that's where I would want to be.
Love that. Class. So we'll just kind of like take this one in whatever way you want. This can be like a 5-minute answer. It could be like a 15-minute answer, like choose your own adventure. How the heck did you end up in Dubai?
Okay. So I had never planned to be in the Middle East. I went to art college in London. I came home briefly and worked freelance as an artist for a few years, sort of doing shows and exhibitions between like Belfast and London. But
what does that look like as a freelance artist? Is that a tough gig?
Yeah, it is. Like I had another job to supplement my income just for a bit of consistency. The other job was doing promotional work for brands. So it was quite a cool gig as well. Like it was very easy. So it wasn't too pressing on me time-wise or energy-wise. So that allowed me to still have...
That's awesome.
Yeah, it still allowed me to have the majority because that was kind of like a weekend job. So I kind of had the full week to paint and work towards like exhibitions. So, you know, it actually started off quite well for me because I had won an award on the back of my degree show when I was graduating in London.
Oh,
and yeah, which was amazing, and that gave me opportunities to exhibit my work and then do private commissions as well. So for a while it was quite a smooth run for me, all things considered, but then the recession hit. So I worked with a gallery in Dublin who were great at selling my work, and one in Belfast as well, but when people started to feel the effects of the recession, art was one of the first things to go because nobody really has the luxury to purchase or invest in art anymore.
Yeah, you can't be painting ultimately. Like things got pretty rough for a while there.
Yeah, and the galleries were starting to shut down, and then I sort of thought, right, I don't want to struggle here. I want to do something creative that I will still be able to maybe travel and have a good income with. So I went back to university and trained to be an art teacher.
Oh, class.
Yeah, so after that, I went traveling. It was quite intense doing the PGCE. So I went traveling after that, went to Australia and Asia for a year and a half.
Epic.
didn't teach a day that I was out there.
I love that. You know, you go with all the best intentions in the world, don't you? And then you end up like, you know, I don't know, picking kiwis on a farm or something.
Exactly. So I was like, just having the backpacker life, having the crack, absolutely loved it. Wasn't really ready to commit to a school yet because I just kind of was enjoying it so much. I just wanted to see this part of the world. So I was picking up just different parts of temp work along the way whenever I needed it to supplement the travel. And then it's funny you should say picking kiwis because I actually did spend 3 months on a banana farm when I was in Australia, which I absolutely loved it. Like, everyone's like, oh, the farm work is so hard. And it is physically quite tough, but the crack that you have and the surreal experience of being like, I'm on a farm. I wasn't picking the bananas, but I was helping to have the bananas ready for picking. So, yeah, that was
so sorry, I have to zoom in a wee bit there. Like, what does that mean? What was your role in that operation?
I had a couple of different roles. So the boys would pick the banana. The banana bunches were really heavy.
Yeah,
you're talking
massive.
Yeah, 20 to like 70 kilos. And so they used to make the lads do that. That was fine with me. And we had to, a lot of the girls had to work in this, they called it the shed. And it's where the boys would bring in the banana bunches and the girls would have to like break them up and wash them and pack them, which Love was that. Quite a difficult like job. But I didn't have to do that. I had a job doing irrigation. So I love my job. I had a quad bike and I would have the irrigation pipes on the back of the quad bike and new banana fields that were ready to plant the bananas. Like, we would have to lay all the pipes. So I would just drive along these huge banana paddocks with the pipe on the back of my quad bike. And then just connect them. I had like a wee toolkit and it would connect the pipes whenever they needed connected. But I was just driving along and laying pipes.
I love that. Like, what type of bananas? Because, you know, they're, especially overseas, there's like bananas you grow that are kind of more like plantains that you'll fry and you'll eat like chips. And then you've got your more kind of like fun sized bananas for a kid's backpack. Like, give us a wee bit more on the banana front here.
I have a feeling they did both. I think they had the fun size and the big sizes as well. Yeah, they were huge. It was in Queensland. It was like a little town called Tully that's known for its bananas in Queensland in Australia. And it was absolutely huge. Like, there were so many backpackers there. So that's why it was such a good crack.
You know, I honestly didn't even really think of Australia growing bananas. But like, of course they could. They've got the climate. They've absolutely... Australia's kind of known for its, how you put this, crazy animals. Any kind of encounters of the wild kind?
Yeah, there were animals all over the show. Like, you wouldn't want to be afraid of anything when if you're working on this farm. Like, you would end up with like when I was out in the field, so sometimes I'd have to go through banana paddocks where the bananas were already the trees were already fully grown and there were spider webs everywhere and you'd end up like spiders crawling on you. I found a python when I was walking through one of the paddocks. I was walking along and it was like lashing rain, so I'd a poncho on and welly boots and I was a bit distracted with the rain and I was like literally 3 inches away from stepping on this huge python that was curled up in on the bottom of one of the trees. And I was quite new to the farm, so I didn't know the difference between deadly snakes and non-deadly snakes. I was just like, snakes, run. And so as soon as I saw it, I bolted out to the main sort of road that was along the banana paddocks and screened for one of the farmers. And I was like, I think I nearly died. There was a snake. I nearly stepped on it. It's down there. I don't know what it is. And then he was like, okay, let's go back down and take a look at it. And I'm thinking, go back down and take a look at it. Are you mental? And this farmer's mad, right? This guy, Carlo, he was the main farmer. He was a madman, right? Really good crack. So he brings us back down. And he's like, oh, that's just a carpet python. That won't do you any harm.
He grips it by... He's like, that's wee Rodney. Sure, he's good crack. Come on, meet him.
Yeah, not bothered by it at all. Like, he thinks I'm a wimp for running away from it. And he grips the python by the head and flings it towards me and goes, catch. Yeah, he's like, catch it. And there's this 4-meter python swung towards me. I have to grip it by the tail. When I tell this story to my friends who are afraid of snakes, they're like traumatized by it. But yeah, so I grip it by the tail because he wants to stretch it out and see how long it is, because he reckons it's quite big. So it was about 4.5 meters.
Wow. And, holy smokes.
Yeah, it was massive. And
two
it was
doors?
Fat.
That's crazy.
Yeah. And it was fat in the middle because it had just eaten like a rat or something. So he was like, oh, it's just been fed to, it's okay. And I was like, oh my God. And just to get the python away, because he was like, right, well, we need to get it out of the paddock. So we had to swing it like a skipping rope. So he starts swinging it back and forth, you know, like to get some traction.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he's like, when I count to three, we're going to let go and just like force it out to this other paddock out there away from this one. So he counts to three and we had to like throw it. And this big python's just like swinging through the air towards this other paddock. So... Oh, yeah, that man. that was farm life in Australia. A far cry from what I'm doing now.
It's great to have those experiences though, isn't it?
Yeah, it's life experience. It's brilliant.
That's fun. So where in Asia did you go?
Southeast Asia. So I travelled Thailand, Cambodia, Vietnam, wow. Singapore, and Laos.
Crazy. And yes. So at that point, was the Middle East even on your radar, or were you still just like, nah, I've done my bit, I'm away back to do whatever?
It wasn't even on my radar. I loved Australia. I loved Asia. I loved the sunshine. I loved the adventure. I loved the new culture. So possibly that, without me having known those experiences, like paved the way for me to try the Middle East without me actually knowing. And I remember when I was doing my PGC in Liverpool, there was a guy from Donegal, and he always used to go on about Dubai because his sister was already teaching in Dubai. So she was probably one of the earlier expats here that were teaching. And
that's awesome.
Yeah, and he used to talk about how amazing Dubai was, and I was like, right, okay. And he would tell me things about it, but I didn't really understand like what the crack was in Dubai or really what the attraction was. It was still something that just wasn't really known to me.
Yeah, yeah. And as you say, at the time, like, wasn't too many people doing it, whereas now, you know, I've mates doing their PGC and they're getting like practically headhunted from schools in Dubai and stuff, you know. Yeah. It's a completely different kind of industry, I suppose.
Yeah, there are so many people here from home, loads of people from Northern Ireland, the South, all over the UK and beyond. So it's crazy. It's such a popular place now for expats.
Mad. So what took you there then?
Yeah, so to round that up, I came home from Australia and Asia, and I actually got a teaching job for 6 months in Belfast. And although I was very grateful for the opportunity and it had its good times, I just really, really missed the sunshine and I missed the adventure. So I kind of got fed up, and I don't know what it was. I think there were still a lot of my friends that were still abroad in sunny countries traveling, and I was looking at what they were doing on Facebook and had a bit of FOMO, and I was like, I still have itchy feet. I don't think I'm ready to stay at home yet. I feel like there's still some adventure that needs to be done. And I just Googled on my lunch break one day, I just Googled like international art jobs, international teaching jobs, and some came up in like South America, China, the Middle East. And I looked at Abu Dhabi and Dubai, and I didn't really know that much about them, but the salary was very good. Yeah. It was seemed to be a sunny country. There was no tax, and it wasn't as far as Australia. It was a little bit more accessible. So I just kind of thought, do you know what? I'm just going to apply for these jobs, see what happens. If I end up in Abu Dhabi or Dubai, I'll just go for a year and save, because the salary is quite attractive. And I ended up getting a job in Abu Dhabi teaching, and it's like a classic expat story. Everybody says this about this place. I was only going to go for a year and save, and I never came home.
That's awesome. So debunk something for me, like, because I've heard a lot of people say like no tax. When you say no tax, do you actually mean no tax? Like, is that true?
Yeah, on your salary, you don't pay any tax. So wow. If you get told you're getting a certain amount, you get that amount into your bank.
That is bonkers.
I know. It's mad. It's crazy. It's so good. Like, the packages for expats are, you know, I can't speak for other professions, but obviously having been a teacher here previously, you can get a good salary and you can get a housing allowance on top of that, or they'll give you your own apartment and then you would pay your own bills, but you kind of get your housing covered. as well as a good salary. So I can understand why a lot of people come here, you know, maybe at the start of their careers to try it out and save a bit of money or do a bit of traveling with their money or whatever they want to do.
Absolutely. I want to spend a wee bit of time here because there's a couple of interesting things in all that, like cost of living. Okay, so obviously cost of living is very topical at the minute. What's mm-hmm. it like out there? You know, because in my head, you know, some of the fear-based obstacles that immediately come into my head whenever I think about uprooting my family and moving to Dubai, I'm like, oh yeah, mm-hmm. the salaries are great, but like, I'm sure you have to pay like, you know, 2 gold bars for a pint of milk or something. You know what I mean? I'm like, where's the catch?
It's funny you should say that because I just came back from New York and now I, after spending 10 days in New York, I'm like, Dubai is cheap. Dubai is actually cheap. It's mental. I don't think, you know what, it has a reputation for being expensive. It can be expensive if you want to live the high life. Mm. But if you're just living a regular life, it actually isn't that expensive. Like the cost of living,
that's interesting.
Equates to the salary quite well. So, you know, you would have your very expensive supermarkets and then you have your equivalent to like your Tesco supermarket over here.
Yeah.
So I can go to an expensive one or I can go to our little, like our Carrefour is our Tesco. I can go there and do my weekly shop and get my groceries for quite cheap. I can go to a bar and get a drink for a few quid, or I can go to a bar and pay £20 for a cocktail because it's overlooking the sea in yeah. one of the 7-star hotels. So you can treat yourself to nice experiences now and again, but you don't have to do that every weekend. I certainly think there's a lot of room for people, families or individuals to come over and be able to save money and still live like a really nice life over here.
It's very cool. It is an amazing opportunity. Like it definitely is. Talk to me about going into the school then, because again, you know, the images I have in my head, or maybe, you know, for the person listening, is, oh, you know, it must be so weird going into a country where they don't speak the same language as you. And, you know, how are you going to integrate yourself into that working environment? And what's the culture going to be like? Speak to that a wee bit for us.
Yeah, so there's a wide range of schools. Some of them are government, some of them are private schools. And I went with a government school. I had a good time there. I spent a few years teaching before I went full time with my business. I would say that the culture was very different because for me, to be honest, it seemed a little bit chaotic compared to home. Home is quite organized and regimented with what they're doing. I think for me, I came into a school. Everybody spoke English to begin with. So all the teachers, no matter, there was teachers from all over the world there. They all spoke fluent English. The kids were Emirati, so they were local kids and they were teenage girls. It was a high school for local girls and the kids were brilliant. They all spoke fluent English. There might be a few here and there that didn't have great English, but the vast majority of them were very proficient, so it was quite easy for me to teach them. But I came over to set up the art department, so it was a bit mental because nobody really knew exactly what I should be doing. So, I came over and no one really knew. On my first day, people thought I was with the IT department. Then they thought I was with the technology department. And then they figured out, oh, actually, no, you're the one who's coming to set up the design department. And I was like, all right, okay. I think it was like a huge school with so many things happening that it was like it took me a wee while to get settled. But once I did, it was okay and it was great because I had like quite a lot of creative freedom in how I set up the department.
It's great.
But at the same time, there were a lot of constraints because the ideas and the ambition I had for it were kind of stopped through. I don't know, I guess like the management having different visions and mm-hmm. not having the budget and stuff for it. So by the end, I had started to get a little bit frustrated with the constraints and that kind of, in a way, it was a blessing because it pushed me to quit my job and go full time with my business.
Epic. So did you start building your business while working then as a teacher? Yeah.
Yeah, I did. Okay. I did.
And was it the case where kind of back when you were in Belfast where you were doing your 9-to-5 and then you kind of had the weekend side hustle, or where did you split your time?
Yeah, pretty much. So I had my day job. I was in school. School hours are quite long here. I was in school from like, say, 7:30 until about 4 o'clock. And I would spend my evenings and weekends working on Design and Down, which is my event company. And to be honest, like, I worked a lot, but it never really felt like work. And that's kind of how I knew that this is something that I would love doing full time, as challenging as it might be. I would teach during the day, and again, my teaching job was a bit draining because of the long hours and early mornings, and teaching generally is quite draining. It takes up a lot of your energy, but it was still fun. Like, I still love teaching art. And then in the evenings, I would start to prep the events that I would put together for Design and Dine. So, you know, I never started it with the end goal of making it a business. Yeah. But after a few months, I started to see that it could be profitable and there was a demand. So I started thinking, okay, put your head down and see what you can do. Let's just see where you can take this, see what you can do with it. And then pretty soon I realized, okay, no, this is going to be my business. This is going to be my own kind of path. And I had kind of had an angle where I knew that I was going to quit teaching. So I started being quite strategic in terms of making the most of my time and saving money, like putting away a lot of money from teaching so that I would have a bit of a cash reserve for when I went full time, self-employed. So it would make things a little bit easier on me.
That's so awesome. So tell us about, let me think then, like, where you got the idea from, number one, and then number two, your first event. I feel like those are two kind of important bits to cover before we go on.
Yeah, definitely. So it happened very organically. And again, I never thought that I would have a creative event company. I always thought that I was going to, if I'd be self-employed, I would go back to like selling paintings or exhibiting or maybe doing illustration. But when I was in the school, and I always think everything happens for a reason, like I was in the school, it was only, my teaching career was very short-lived, but I feel like I was put there because of the way that Design and Dine originated. So I was teaching the girls, the students, how to paint and doing exhibitions with them. And the other teachers were seeing the work that I was doing with the students, and they were really impressed. And one of the teachers was like, I think, you know, I would love if you could teach us how to paint. Like, do you think you could teach us?
Class.
I would really love how to learn how to paint, yeah. And I was like, yeah, I mean, I could do that, but I don't want it to be another art class where we're sitting in one of the classrooms and it's all really formal.
Yeah.
I would love us to just do it somewhere outside of school and have a bit of crack doing it. Like, I'd want it to be fun. And a few of the teachers were like, yeah, if you did that, we would definitely come, like if you did an art class. Initially I was thinking, oh God, I could do it at home, or and maybe people bring around, you know, a bottle of wine, we have some food or whatever, but I didn't really have the space. So just coincidentally at the time, a friend of mine, Adrian, he was a manager of a hotel over here.
Unreal.
Yeah, so it was the Crown Plaza Hotel in Abu Dhabi. And I went to him and I said, I kind of have an idea of doing a painting class, but I want it to be fun. I want the people who come to be able to drink and have some food, and let's make it like a kind of get together where it's very informal and we all have a bit of crack. And he was like, you know, that's a really good idea. I actually do have a space for you. And he brought me around the hotel and we looked at different spaces and found the right one. And then I was going to put together, it was really before even Instagram was like a huge thing. Everyone was still kind of.
I really wanted to ask, like, what's the timeline of this? Because I think that's also important, because, you know, from the conversations we've had before recording and even reading your stuff, like, you were on the cutting edge of this type of event. Do you know what I mean? Like, if you were to say, like, you did this last year, you'd be like, okay, cool, great idea. But the fact that it was like, quote unquote, so long ago in terms of like how social media and that kind of real visual momentary experience style event has kind of come on, like, you were really at the forefront of it. It's crazy.
Yeah. So it was like 2015 and everyone was still sort of using Facebook. So my way of marketing it, or just let my friends and friends of friends know, was going to be through a Facebook event page. So I had to come up with a title for it. And I was like, I was sitting on my lunch break in school, like brainstorming. And I wanted to call it Design and Wine.
You know, it's funny. It actually did come in my head whenever you were saying about, you know, oh yeah, and the teachers could bring a bottle of wine. I was like, yeah, again, in a parallel universe, this could have been called design and wine.
Yeah, and it would have been had it been a different country, but you can't. The alcohol laws here restrict you from having references to alcohol in your company.
There you
title.
Go.
Yeah, so
okay, it keeps you that bit more open as well, which is probably has served you with different clientele as well.
Exactly. I was very short-sighted at the time with design and wine. So then I was like, oh, no, I can't have alcohol in the company or in the event title. So I settled on design and dine, which is actually much nicer. I put together a little Facebook event. I put my first design and dine flyer, which is quite rubbish, on the cover. And I was just teaching them like a little kind of easy to follow acrylic painting of a sunset. And I sent the invite to friends and I ended up getting about 15 people in. And I wasn't sure. So I was like, I don't really know how I should model this, like what way I should promote it or charge or anything. Mm-hmm. And it was actually, so all of my colleagues were American and they were so enthusiastic and supportive. And we were sitting in the staff room of the school and they were like, you should charge this. They were all math teachers as well.
Mate, so Americans are the best for that. Like you go up to like an American and you're like, yeah, I'm thinking of charging, like you're doing the Northern Irish. Yeah, I'm thinking of maybe charging like a five or a head or something. They're like, no, man, you add a zero on the end of that. Yeah, it should be exactly, $50.
Exactly. Because I didn't have a clue. And I was like, okay, well, here's how much my materials would cost. And this is the amount of prep time. And they were like, yeah, I would totally pay this amount. You should be charging this amount.
So good.
I would pay this. My friends would pay this. And whatever. And then I was like, oh, right, okay. So they kind of gave me the courage because I feel like if I was sitting with a few mates from Belfast, they'd be like, oh, I don't know, maybe just
750 is a bit much, isn't it, Gemma? Yeah. I don't know about that. Like, I can get £2 for that.
Exactly. So that thanks to them, they actually gave me the encouragement and, the sort of bravery to go ahead with it and put it out there and charge that amount. And they came, some of my friends came and some people randomly saw it on Facebook and came along, and it was really fun. So at the start, it was just for the crack completely. And then because everyone had a good time and my friend Fraser came along, he's a photographer on the side of teaching. So he came along and took photos and we put them on Facebook, and everyone was like, oh my God, what is this? You can drink and have food and learn how to do a painting. And I was like, yeah. And then
point, they're like, is that even legal? I've never thought of that before.
Yeah. It was very unusual at the time. Like I said, no one was doing it in this country, definitely not at home. It was the first of its kind. So I can't speak for other countries, but it was definitely a novelty. And then I put out the next one a couple of weeks later. And then there were 30 people that came, and then I put out the next one and it was 50, the next one was 75, and then the next one was 100. So Incredible. It literally grew very rapidly. And then after a couple of months where it was like 100 people coming in the door with very little, no paid advertising, all organic marketing on Facebook and word of mouth. Yeah. So that's when I started to go, right, this is a thing. People enjoy this. There's demand for it. And that's when I started to sort of shift my mindset towards growing the company and trying to be a bit more professional about what I was doing and making my exit strategy for teaching.
So cool. I mean, so much to kind of unpack in that. The first thing that pops up in my head is, in what ways has the experience changed as a customer, say from your first five events, you know, that lovely journey you mapped out of 15 to 100. How has the customer experience changed from that time in Design and Dine's history to say if I was to rock up to your next event, you know, say next week?
It's changed a lot. Like, we've really grown a lot through trial and error and customer feedback and making things a lot more varied and diverse to keep it fresh, because obviously it's, you know, we've been running now like 6 years plus maybe. So before we used the same venue, so we used to always use the Crown Plaza and we would always have the same menu where you get like a couple of drinks and it would be like a little buffet of sort of casual finger food. Now we do what's known as a brunch in Dubai. So a brunch is not like a breakfast lunch. It's an experience where you go to really good hotels and you get unlimited food and drinks. So it's an open bar and food. Yeah, unlimited food. And you can get that across very different contexts where you could do it in a pub, you could do it in a 7-star hotel. So there's all different levels of that experience. So because brunches are such a popular concept over here, I started to pair with different hotels that can offer a brunch. So with Design and Dine Now, we have a range of different partner hotels. So you could come to, for example, the Westin Hotel would be one of our hotels, and one of them overlooks the Dubai Marina skyline. The other one in Abu Dhabi looks over the Abu Dhabi golf course, the famous one where the HSBC championship comes.
Class.
So you'd have like an outdoor venue, and then inside you would get like a buffet that has food from around the globe, cocktail stations, wine bars, everything you could want in terms of food and beverage. And that would stay open for 3 hours while you learn how to do your painting. And our painting changes, the type of painting that we do changes each month to teach the customers a whole different style of painting. Sometimes it'll be pop art, sometimes it'll be we do like animals, sometimes we do skylines, we do abstract painting, mixed media art, Banksy inspired like kind of street art designs, everything you can imagine really. I have really tried to be as creative as possible. You know, I'm a professional artist on the side of this as well, so I try to be very innovative in given a broad range of styles and painting techniques for the customers, but making it as easy to follow as possible,
yeah,
and as accessible as possible for all the customers, because we want to make art accessible to everybody. So, you know, we say you don't need to have, people get a bit skeptical because they're like, oh, I'm not creative, or I don't know how to paint. But our mission is like, you don't need to have any experience in art whatsoever. Mm. Like anyone could come at all, and maybe you have never lifted a pencil since primary school. That's okay. We kind of have it planned really professionally and really, really well organized so that anyone can come along and have a good painting by the end with our like tools and structure.
That's class. So let's kind of go slightly more into the business side. And the bit that I'd love to kind of focus in on is, how do you start to let go of control ever so slightly and delegate and like give your baby like into the hands of other people to either help you out or start running stuff for you? What was that transition like?
It was a little bit scary, but it's been, you know, the best thing that I've ever done. And I wish I kind of learned the laws of delegation a bit earlier in building the business. But I guess a few years ago, particularly post-COVID, so I really had a lot of time during COVID to think about how the business was being run and how I could grow. And started working with business mentors, actually. I would hire a mentor to kind of look at the business from the outside, an objective point of view, and get some insight. And the thing across the board that they all used to say is like, you need to delegate more. You're doing too much yourself in the business, which was true. Like I was doing all the marketing. I was hosting all the events. I was doing all the customer correspondence, all the artwork designs for the events, and the social media. I was even, you know, cleaning the paintbrushes after the events as well. And like, I was pretty, like, I was really working myself too hard, and it didn't have a lot of room to focus on the bigger picture, like business development and growth. So the first thing I did was hire my assistant, Sari, who is incredible. And she does a lot of my social media and my admin. So I delegated like all of that to her, which has been incredible, because as an artist, that's not my strong point. Mm. I'm very creative and I have good business vision, but emails and table plans customer emails and organization is not for me. She's so much better at it. So that's like a godsend. And then I started hiring staff who are amazing as well. So I have like a staff assistants that come and set up my event and take down my event.
That's great.
So I have a team in Abu Dhabi and Dubai that do that for me, and it just is like such a relief as well, because at the events, if I'm still hosting the event, it just saves my energy so that I can give it to the customers and do the best job of presenting and hosting and teaching and making sure all the customers have the best time. That's always the first, like the number one priority. And then I have my instructors as well. So I hire other artists and art teachers who will come and assist me. So we have events that are like 150 people. And to make sure that all the customers are seen and have like the option of one-to-one support as well as our overall instruction, like at the front on the microphone, my instructors will go around, visit each table and give one-to-one support with any customers that would like a little bit of extra help with their paintings. So it's fantastic. It's been really good. A learning curve, but you know, I think we're at the stage now where I am at the stage now where I can have my instructors run events for me. And when I was traveling recently, I did have my instructors host some bigger events and some smaller events for me, and it all went very well. So I'm pleased with that, and it's something that I want to keep working on.
So cool. Honestly, that's an area I could talk to you for like another hour about, just all about that area of like delegation and that business development piece. I think it's so interesting, but we'll maybe pick that one up another time. Talk to me about coming to Northern Ireland then, as in like obviously you do come to Northern Ireland, but you've got two upcoming events, Design and Dine events. Tell us a wee bit about that, and then also just if we can tie in, you know, what's your kind of future plan here for Design and Dine? Like, what are you really excited about and what are you kind of working towards building?
Yeah, so I have actually done a Design and Dine in Belfast before. We launched Design and Dine in March 2020 in Belfast with the vision of making it a regular event, but unfortunately COVID hit like 2 weeks after
March
our launch event.
That's almost like a bad joke, isn't it?
I know, it's actually hilarious. Like, could you have picked a worse month to like launch? But we weren't to know, and the event was actually it was amazing. So we did it in the Merchant in Belfast city center, and we had a sellout event. So there were 70 people in the event space at the Merchant. So it was the Rita Duffy room where you would get like a lot of weddings and corporates and stuff, and it was a beautiful event. It was a Friday night and everyone learned how to paint icons of Belfast. So we paintings of like Titanic building, Harland and Wolff.
Very cool.
And everyone could learn their own kind of customized painting, and we had a ball. The customers all did a really good painting as well, and I think again in Belfast, because it was the first one, a lot of people came sort of skeptical about, you know, whether they could paint, and people were nervous, to be honest. They were like, look, this looks like it's going to be good fun, but I can't paint, so I don't really have any faith that I'm going to be able to do this. And everyone came back and the feedback was amazing, because everyone was like, I can't believe I have sat here, you know, having a few drinks and having a crack with people, and I'm going home with like a finished canvas painting. So we were hoping word of mouth would spread, but obviously COVID was in the way, and it was very difficult to plan things because everything was so up and down, as you know. So now we're at the stage, thankfully, where things are getting back to normal. So we are going to plan two events in the summer. One will be an evening event, because like I was saying with Design and Dine, we have very different concepts now. We do like evening events where you can have a few drinks and you can have dinner, but then we also do daytime events. We do afternoon teas, and we do like what we call a Sunday social, which is a breakfast, a sociable breakfast, like a lazy breakfast on a Sunday. We can do like a creative workshop as you're having, you know, a kind of breakfast brunch on a Sunday morning. So we're going to do one of those, a Sunday event, a kind of brunch event where you have a late breakfast and do a creative workshop. And then we're going to do one of our kind of evening events, which is more of a party vibe. Canvas painting with a few drinks and some food. So we're working on the dates and venues at the moment, and we'll hopefully have those for release by the end of the month.
Awesome. And we'll definitely put links and promotional stuff to that in the description wherever you're listening to this. So if you're on Spotify, you just open up your app here and you flick through the description, you'll see links to wherever you can book tickets for that, and also on the website as well. Cool. You ready to do a couple of stock questions? We always kind of end the episodes with the same sort of formula, like the questions we've been asking every single guest we've had on the show so far.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, I'm not gonna lie, like they're a bit intense if you're up for it. Like there's a reason we started doing these at the end, because it's like, you know, this was written by like a very, very energetic, ambitious Matthew like 5 years ago, who was like, oh, how do we really get to know people? So
I love it. Yeah, I'm a pretty open book, Matthew, to be honest with you. So
well, take them whatever way you want. Go personal, go professional, it's totally up to you. But the first one is, what has been the most challenging moment that you've experienced so far, and if you don't mind sharing with us, how were you able to overcome it?
This is definitely, without doubt, the most challenging time of my life. And it's personal and professional, but 2020 for me was a tough year, because I actually went into the year having lost my mum. So, my mum passed away January 2020. So obviously that's like that, anyone who's lost a loved one, lost a close family member will know that's the hardest thing that you'll ever go through. And for me, what I tried to kind of do to deal with my grief was kind of busy myself with work, and obviously did Design and Dying in Belfast, and had big plans for doing it in building it up in the Middle East as well. But then with COVID, everything shut down, so I couldn't distract myself, you know, with work. So I would say 2020 was very much like a life-changing year for me, because I had to deal with grief really properly for the first time with heavy grief, and then had all of the business challenges of being an event company, not being able to run events for the year ahead. So I had to do like a lot of work, and I know that a lot of people have similar stories, because a lot of people suffered loss during COVID, and a lot of people with losing loved ones, and also with business as well. So it just made me change my whole outlook on life. I changed the way I lived a lot, and just really taught me, you know, like life is short. You don't know what's going to happen. My life was turned upside down really that year. So I live life with a lot more purpose now. I value, you know, all the good things in my life a lot more, and prioritize like the people in my life and family and stuff. Yeah. So I guess, have I overcome it? Like, I think that you always live with grief. Yeah. You don't really overcome it. You learn how to kind of like deal with it in day to day life. But it's definitely made me focus on my health and just live life with a lot more purpose and value things a lot more in life now.
That's class. Thanks for leaning into that one. That was really, really class answer. Really appreciate that.
Yeah, not at all.
Flip side, then, like, what about greatest success so far? You know, something like that, like most proud moment.
I think, you know, whenever I quit my teaching job and set up like my company, that was a really proud moment for me. I had always thought, I always knew, you know, whenever we talked earlier in the conversation about when you're a teen, you sort of you think about living abroad. Like never really, for whatever reason, I never really saw myself as an employee of somebody when I was an adult. I always thought, I always thought I was going to work for myself, like have a business or be an artist or something. So when I got to that stage where I quit teaching and I was ready to embrace life as an entrepreneur, that was an incredible, like the feeling of freedom is just incredible. And I still wake up really thankful, like, you know, that I am my own boss. And obviously business has its challenges with COVID especially, and every entrepreneur will relate to like the day-to-day struggle of running your own business. But for me, one of my big values in life is freedom and flexibility. So whenever I got to that stage, it was just very, I felt very proud of myself.
It's awesome. How have you seen Northern Ireland change since you left effectively? You know, I think because it's, you view your home so differently as soon as you leave it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, you do. I love Northern Ireland. I love Belfast, where I come from. I've seen it change so much over the years, and you see the change a lot more dramatically when you live away from home, because you might be only home, say, every 6 months.
Yeah.
And then when I go home, like, I love Belfast. I think it's such a good city, and Northern Ireland is such a beautiful place. And it's changed for the better so much since I really left, like, properly when I was 18. And I've lived at home sporadically, maybe for a few months here and there. But I just think it's progressed in terms of what we can offer people, with, like, nightlife, things to do, places to see, especially in Belfast. And culturally, it's just changed so much. I just think that everyone is so tolerant. Everyone is more aligned with their vision. I think everyone just wants, the majority of people at home just want the best for each other now. And it's just lovely to see. Like, there's such a camaraderie of people. And our generation, I think, are the first generation to kind of not be directly, I don't know what age you are actually, but with my generation, we're like the first to not have been, like, very directly impacted by the troubles.
Yeah.
And the generation after, even better. So people, I think people just have, like, a different outlook now. They're just, everyone's just happy for each other to have, you know, a good future ahead. I really feel that spirit whenever I'm home now. And yeah, I just love it. Every time I go home, I just feel so out of touch, because there's a million new places to go, you know, go out for a night and go for food. And Belfast is so trendy now. It's, like, so hip. And
it is super hip. Yeah.
It's, like, full of hipsters and stuff. I love it though. You can go back and you can do whatever, you know, there's a place to eat for everybody. There's a place to go out for everybody. So it's got good variety. And it's, I always love the crack whenever you go home as well. Like, you can't really get the same crack anywhere else. So it's, I'm so fond of it.
It's great. I mean, the one thing that I now know Belfast is missing after this conversation is a Dubai style brunch. That is something I'm putting out there to the people. I'm like, if you own a hotel or a restaurant, you want to make that happen, I will gladly pay you copious amounts of money to be a patron of it.
100%. I will be there running the painting classes while people do their bottomless brunch at home. 100%.
So great. Love that. Let's think then. Okay, if you were to take anyone from Northern Ireland, dead or alive, out for a glass of wine, who would you take? Where would you take them, and why?
That's a really good question. There's some people that I would take out for a glass of wine because I think they'd be good crack. But I think, in terms of just, like, getting into somebody's, getting to know a brilliant mind, it might be Seamus Heaney. Just in terms of, like, the as an artist, I love to know, I would love to know how his life was creatively, like, how he tapped into his creativity, how he struggled with life, you know, with a creative life. So yeah, it would definitely be Seamus Heaney. And where would I take him? You need to tell me, Matthew, because I don't know where to go in Belfast now. Where's the best places?
I mean, if I was taking Famous Seamus out for a pint, I would be taking him to the Jaggy Nettle pub in Strandmills.
Yeah.
It's a, you know, it's got a fire. It's right beside Queen's.
Oh, yeah.
He's got that kind of Donegal pub vibe. I just feel like that's where Seamus belongs. Or you could just go the complete opposite and take him to somewhere, like, ultra modern, ultra slick, and just see how he reacts.
I think I would do that. I'm a fan of I think this is, like, Dubai life getting to me now, but I'm a fan of a view. I love, like, big windows and, like, a nice view, cool, like a skyline view. So maybe Belfast has a few rooftops now, doesn't it? Few rooftop bars. Maybe it takes Seamus to a rooftop bar, buy him a strawberry daiquiri.
You know what, mate? That's I didn't even know I needed to hear that until you said it. That is exactly what you would do with Famous Seamus.
Yeah.
I love that. So class. Cool. Well, I think that's us on the final question. Yeah, it is. So, like, this is how we always kind of land the plane, as it were. It's a bit of a cliche, like, I won't lie to you, Gemma, but, like, I can't get away from it. It's just, it always delivers, so no pressure. If you could go back in a time machine to 18-year-old Gemma, just as she's getting on the plane, saying goodbye to the family, heading off to uni. You know, you could sit beside her on that plane and you had a couple of minutes of her time. What sort of things would you be saying to her?
I would be saying, live life with less fear. Don't worry about how things are going to work out. Just do your very best and enjoy everything. When I was 18, I put a lot of pressure on myself. Like, I need to be successful. I need to be this. I need to be that. But you're like, you're a kid when you're 18. Life will always, you know, work out for the best, I think, if you kind of do your best, but like, don't come at it with fear. Just come at it with like enjoyment and appreciation. So yeah, I would say don't put so much pressure on yourself. Enjoy yourself. Work hard, but embrace life to the fullest. And yeah, have fun.
So awesome. I'm so excited to get this one out. Gemma, I feel like it's going to be like genuinely really inspirational for a lot of people listening. Like, I just love, you know, I love the idea because we've all been there. You know, you're working a job you don't really care for. You're on your lunch break or you're out for a walk or whatever, and you put a podcast like this on, and it does. It can really just unlock something. So, no, I appreciate
absolutely.
It. Appreciate everything you shared today. And some of those wee nitty-gritty details, I think, are very valuable for people as well. So, no, cheers.
Amazing. Well, it's my pleasure. Thank you so much. It's I'm honored to be on it. I know you've had some big names on the podcast, so it's my pleasure to be here.
Oh, so cool. Do you fancy a bonus question? Will we do one more?
Go for it.
We're at 56 minutes, you know. We could bump this up here to an hour if we play our cards right.
Round it off.
Okay. Maybe that's the absolute psychopath in me that's just like, oh, you gotta get to the 60, man. What are we doing? Look, it's a wee one I throw in at the end sometimes. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But we go for kind of gut reactions here, okay? So it's an impossible question. You'll never actually get the answer. Or if you do, it'll come to you in like 2 days' time whenever you're like out for a walk.
So you're setting me up here, basically?
Yeah, it is pretty much. I said to you off mic, it's not the Nolan show. I'm not going to get you. This is where we try to get you, okay?
You lied to me.
Yeah, we get you in a good way, hopefully. So first thing comes into your head whenever I ask you, what is the kindest thing that somebody has ever done for you?
Oh, God, that is really hard. What is the kindest thing? I honestly, you know what? Like, I this will probably will come to me, the proper answer, in a couple of days, but sometimes random acts of kindness like really get me choked up, you know, like whenever you like see social media and you watch the news and everyone has this experience where they're like, oh my God, the world is going nuts here. And then like I could be struggling with a bag or something like that, and just like a random person will just come up and like lift it for you and help you to your car. Like that's happened to me a couple of times. There was a guy in my building, I was moving in and I was trying to take everything from my car to the door. And he was like, I could tell he was in a rush somewhere, but he just came and like literally helped me lift all of my bags, like back and forth from like the car to the door.
Class.
And I was like, thank you so much. And he was like, no bother, like smiley as anything, no bother at all. And I was like, he didn't have to do that. Wee things like that. I'm sure there's something more profound that'll come to me soon.
Naturally,
But just little acts of kindness, yeah. I just think from strangers are great.
Yeah. I think it's like you say, you know, the story that's kind of like being told to us day in, day out isn't necessarily true, or at least it's not the full picture. Do you know what I'm saying? And sometimes you need those wee small reminders of like, you know, I live in a small village in Northern Ireland here. I moved out of the city a few years ago, and even walking around there, you know, there's just these wee small everyday encounters you have with people where you're just like, thank God, like people aren't actual all serial killers. Do you know what I mean? Like it just restores your faith in humanity.
Yeah,
you do really need that. And it's a challenge as well, even when you were speaking to like, well, I gotta give that too, you know, I can't just walk around expected to receive it all the time.
Yeah, completely. No, I do. I try as well, because I want to believe in humanity as well, and not everyone's like a serial killer. So yeah, I try. I try and smile at people and say hello to people and be kind, and and hope that it comes back as well. Yeah.
Class. Well, like I said earlier, if you'd like to Show up. What a way to pitch that. You can tell I'm not the best at doing the ad breaks here. If you'd like to join us at one of the Design and Dine events, like I said, check out the description of this episode or head over to our website and click the webpage. Click on the photo of Jenna.
My God.
My goodness, you know, I'm not even going to edit this. I'm not even going to leave this bit in just to shame myself into doing this smoother next time. You get
You've
what I'm trying to say?
For an hour.
The links. Aye, this is it. I'm like Cinderella. Once the clocks turn 60 minutes, I turn into an absolute pumpkin. Yeah, look, if you fancy coming to a Design and Dine event with Gemma.
Yes.
You can join us. There's going to be links.
Amazing.
Where all the links are. We'll get that from Jenna. And we would love to see you there.
Yeah, and I'm just going to add in as well as Belfast, if you do, because I know a lot of people will have friends in the Middle East and America as well. We just launched in New York last weekend, and we have regular events around the Middle East too. So for anyone in Ireland, in Northern Ireland, if you have mates in New York or in Dubai or Abu Dhabi, let them know as well.
Class. And this is a surprising plug here I'm about to give. We actually have a relatively large Dubai audience.
No way.
So I don't, it must just be every single Northern Irish person in Dubai. Amazing. But if you haven't connected yet with Jenna, go ahead and get in touch with her, you know, via the website or whatever. I'm sure she'd love to see you along at some of the events.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because we have a great Invest Northern Ireland office in Dubai. And yeah, there are for a few people from home. So that's, I'm really glad to hear that. That's brilliant.
Cool. Gemma, thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Unbelievable stuff. Look, thank you so much once again for listening. My name is Matthew Thompson, and we're on a mission to share 350 conversations that celebrate Northern Ireland and the incredible people who call it home. Massive thanks once again to NI Connections for making today's episode possible. And like I said at the top of the show, you can find out more about our global diaspora, listen to other conversations in this series, and sign up to their free monthly newsletter by visiting niconnections.com. Other than that, hope you really enjoyed today's episode, and I look forward to catching you again soon.